Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. Gratefully, we were able to finally get hold of our guest who was scheduled for today. And without further ado and all the introduction, I'm just going to welcome a wonderful person on our show, the author of a brilliant book entitled Burning Within. Welcome to Toward the Light, Ranelle Wallace. Hello, Ranelle.
Good afternoon, I guess I should say, Julia.
Yes.
Boy, I have never had so much adversarial hits to have the show come on the air.
Well, it's kind of an interesting sort of time, I'm sure. And it's interesting when I think about what happened to you, because you were in a plane crash that resulted in a near-death experience, and you're being severely burned, and there's a lot going on about fires and that sort of thing. So let's get into what happened to you and all the resulting, you're getting into this really wonderful, special work that you've been doing the past number of years. So go ahead, love, let's turn it over to you and tell us about your experience.
Well, my experience came from a place that, you know, I'm a very religious person. Prior to this, now I'm a spiritual person, and I like to believe that they go together. But prior to that, I felt like I was going through all the motions, doing the things that were important and right in my mind. My values, though, were very misplaced. I placed a lot of emphasis on how important things needed to look. I was a television reporter, just aspiring to get to a larger station. I, lived in an upper middle class neighborhood, had two little children at the time. One was 4 and one was 2. My marriage was struggling, and, we were fighting back and forth. My ex-husband, who we're now divorced, decided that we should go on this trip to Utah, and somehow by taking this trip and spending time alone together, that we would become closer. Well, that didn't happen. We were up, in Utah for a week and a half. Now, little tiny promptings came to my heart so much that I'd taken, my kids' things. I put a name on one box and of my son and the name of my daughter on another box. And I found my most precious valued treasures that I wanted them to have in those boxes. I don't know why I did it. I just did it. And then the prompting was that another reporter that I worked with, said, I don't understand why you're going on this trip. You shouldn't go. I just, I have a strong feeling you shouldn't. Well, I didn't put a whole lot of weight in what he had to say. He was a sportscaster, and he was kind of a craft type person. So I just went, and look where that's coming from, not. And, I just then moved on and continued to pack that night. But on the trip from dropping my kids off on our small flight to my parents, the feeling became so overwhelming that I grabbed a pad of paper, and I started filling out at the very top of the page, last will and testament. I filled it out completely. I got to that airport and gave my mom, the suitcase and this piece of paper. And I said, put that someplace safe in case anything happens. And she says, Ranelle, that's not like you. What's going on? And I said, Mom, I had this dream last night that I was walking through a graveyard, and I came upon a stone, and I fell to my knees, and I started to weep. She says, well, whose name was on the stone? And I says, oh, I don't know, Mom. It was just a dream. But I thought, just in case, you need to know. Well, we were there in Utah for a week and a half. We made a decision to come home early. One, because we were fighting like cats and dogs. And two, because we had heard about a horrible snowstorm that was coming through the southern part of Utah. and I'm going to try to make it as short as I can because it's such a long story, but we ended up almost crashing the day before. And, you know, just prior to almost crashing the day before, trying to make an emergency landing, I committed, you know, when you're scared to death, it's amazing how quick we find out, you know, that there's got to be a God. Because, boy, do we pray.
Wow.
You know, oh, no, God, please help me. You know, and
yes.
Then you make promises like you've never made before. I swear if you get me through this, you know, I'll never fly again. And that was the promise I made. We stayed in a hotel that night. And during the course of that night, I began to have a dream. And the dream was so vivid and clear. It was what was going to happen the very next day. We got up that morning, and of course, Terry and I, you know, were arguing back and forth about going or not. We made a decision to go because we had heard about another airport close by that had car rentals. And so we got out to the airport. We took off. And in that flight, the snowstorm progressively began to get worse. And as we tried to find the airport, we got ourselves into a situation where we were in zero visibility and couldn't see. I said, Terry, if you've never listened to me before, please listen to me now. Please turn the plane and go back. And so in his attempt to turn back, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we must have come up on a mountain because right off the wingtip were the mountains.
Oh,
and he screamed, and I screamed both, and he pulled the plane up, and he says, we've got to get this plane down now, or we're going to hit something. And he says, do you see anything? Well, the clouds broke enough that there was the only thing that was out there was this major freeway called the 15 Freeway through Utah. And he says, we're going to have to make an emergency landing. So he says, I'm going to try to become parallel with it, because every once in a while the fog would break and we could see it. And he says, I'm going to try to make a landing on that freeway. The clouds enveloped us. He said, focus, focus, focus. Can you see the ground? And he was very peered on to the instruments. I heard the warning signal go down. The wheels come down. We were just, you know, about 25 feet above the ground, and the clouds broke. And suddenly we realized we were landing on the top of a moving semi.
What's a semi, please?
A semi is a big tractor-trailer rig. You know, the big trucks that...
Oh, okay, a lorry truck. I'm just translating into English here.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know, what do they call them there?
Lorries.
Ah. Well, we were almost landing on a moving one of those.
Wow.
And so he then pulled up. And when he did, of course, now I prayed. And I was scared again. And I said, you know, I know what I said yesterday, but if you get me through this, I promise that, you know, I'll give all my money to the church and I'll never spank my kids again. And, you know, it was kind of crazy. And then I just said, you know, Terry said, stop, stop, pay attention, tell me where we are. And I said, okay, Father in heaven, please let angels be on our wings. Mm-hmm. And just then the clouds broke. And I heard chunk, 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 and I looked in front of me, and we had come into a mountain at 200 miles per hour. He pulled up on the steering column, which caused the tail of the plane, you know, the plane to nose to go up and the tail to come down, and we tried to fly it very steeply up against this mountain, but it was too steep. And we belly flopped against the mountain and exploded on impact. And the plane skid for quite some distance, and I saw the cliff very quickly. I said, forgive me for everything I've done and take care of my kids. And literally inches before, we came to a dead halt in front of that cliff. And I said, oh, my gosh, we've just survived a plane crash. And then there was silence. And then there was screaming. And Terry says, get out, get out. Get out, get out. And I noticed that the entirety of the plane was completely engulfed in flames. It was coming up over the windshield, all over. The roof started to melt. And I then turned to the door handle of the only door on this plane, and I started to try to get it open. the fuel had built up from a broken gas line, and I turned to the door and gave it one large kick. And when I did, a backdraft explosion took place, a secondary explosion, and it threw my body out almost to the end of the wingtip. By then, my complete body was on fire. And my first thought, I don't know if any of, if you've ever just been burned even a little bit by a frying pan.
Oh, yes.
Or curling iron.
I've had burns.
That
definitely had serious burns in my life.
Yeah, that incredible stinging sensation.
Oh, yes.
And you can't get it to stop. And I fell to my knees. I was in so much horrendous pain, and I could see parts of my clothes falling off in flames. So I quickly took some mud and snow between the rocks up this rocky cliff, and I started throwing it, trying to get the flames out. And then a wet, slushy snowstorm came by and started pelting out the rest of it. When I finally saw smoke smoldering up from my body, because I was just all black and charcoaled, I knew I was in a lot of trouble, and I knew I needed help. So I started to look around in this very dense, cloudy fog, looking for somebody. Maybe they had seen us crash something. And, I just couldn't believe I was alone. Where's Terry? And then I looked up in this 30-foot flame and saw his body hunched over the steering column. And the flame was completely engulfing him. And I tried to make my way back to the flame, and I screamed, "Get out, get out, get out, get out." And he wouldn't come to. As far as I could see, he was completely, engulfed in flames. And so I made my way back to the rock, and I started to cry. And I said, "If there's a God alive, I need your help, and I need it now." And I started to cry, and I put the power of faith completely into action and said, "Please, I need your help." That's it. Somebody may have heard us crash. So I started screaming, "Help, please help." At that very moment, my ex-husband stood up inside the flame, and with his hand extended out, he walked directly out of the flame. And what was so shocking, that he was completely unscathed.
Wow.
He was. There was nothing burned on him. His hands were a little burned, but the rest of him was perfect. And he came looking bewildered in the fog, looking out in the fog. I says, "What's the matter? What are you doing?" And he says, "Rennell, where's the man that pulled me out? Where is the big man dressed in white? Where is he?" And then I said, "Terry, there was no man." And he then said, "Well, God has heard your prayer, and we need to get out of these mountains."
And the fact that you had the strength still to even be able to speak.
Yes. It was horrendous. It was an act of God. And we stood up and, said a prayer, and not knowing where we were going, the snow started to come down again in a blistering storm. And we hiked in zero visibility for 5.5 miles, hiking down a mountainside. It was quite horrific. We found a deer with steam coming off it because some mountain lion had just eaten it. And that scared me more. And so we quickened our pace. We got out of the mountains, and then we started hiking out into a flat area. My feet now were like huge mud balls. I had no shoes or anything on me except for my jeans that were scorched brown and a piece of carpet that had glued to my chest from the explosion.
Oh,
and that was all there was.
And you were able to walk in that condition for all those miles.
It's just,
wow.
I look back on it, and I just, now I'm so much older, I just think, how did that happen?
Yes.
How did that happen?
I want to interject here. Let this be a really powerful message for everyone to always listen to your intuition and your dreams and even the messages coming from other people, even unlikely sources. Because here you were, and in fact I was going to ask you, didn't you have any premonitions before this incident took place? And clearly you did, and you had warnings, and yet somehow you just defied them.
You know, it's interesting, and that's what I talk about so often to people. Please sit still. It, you know, people pray, and we see people, you know, and I did that, but I'm a good person. Why is this happening to me?
Yeah.
You know, I've done everything right. I deserve better than this. I deserve more than this. You know, just because we get a bunch, we think that God thinks that because we have a point system that we're going to get this great reward at the end of the point system, but it's, you know, he guides and directs us in very subtle ways. It's when we're not, you know, we're in our will, but as soon as we submit and say, okay, in a spiritual sense, I'm going to submit, and I'm going to be still, and no matter how it comes, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to be obedient. And, you know, I still have my struggles. You know, I tell you, you know, I've had all kinds of struggles, and I'm still learning my lessons. But what a wonderful refining process.
Isn't it, though? My goodness me, and metaphorically and literally, you had a baptism of fire, didn't you?
Yeah, a refiner's fire, literally.
Oh, geez, oh my. Now, do you recall your near-death experience?
Oh, it was so vivid. You know, it's interesting because we had walked to that same freeway we tried to land on.
And you're talking about the motorway?
Yeah, it's a motorway, a highway.
Okay, got it.
And we stood there for about 20 minutes. What we found out that we had only walked for literally out in the wilderness, we were only 1 mile from the hospital.
Wow.
And they took us to that tiny hospital. Because it was such a rural area, they did not have the equipment to take care of it. So they talked to me and asked me if I wanted to get on a plane to get me to a larger city. And, of course, I screamed no. And so when you... And so they put me in an ambulance, and I was out about 20 minutes when the fluid built up into my lungs. My head was swollen out to the distance of my shoulders. And I was choking on my own fluid, and I screamed help, I can't breathe. And a male nurse, and this is the power of thought, he said, stop trying, we'll do all the work for you. And hey, okay, that sounded great. Get me out of this pain, that's great. You go ahead and do all the work for me then. And I gave up. And that's when I had cardiac arrest, and they literally started jumping on my chest and started pumping on my chest. I saw it, and I saw Terry sitting up in the ambulance, and he then freaked out and said, what are you doing? And they, you know, gathered very tightly around me so he couldn't see and said, we're just clearing her lungs. And I realized... you know, something was going on. I'm thinking, wait a minute, there were two of us in the plane crash. Who's this third person?
Wow.
And then I saw the hand fall off the gurney that was so black and bloody that I realized it was my hand. Mm-hmm. And immediately I saw, you know, myself rising to the top of the ambulance and then suddenly sucked into a tunnel. And as I went through the tunnel, there were flashes of lights and colors all over. And then I got very frightened because I could hear people talking next to me, telling me that I was going somewhere. And I asked, where am I going? And I got very frightened. And I saw a pinpoint of light that was brighter than the sun, but somehow it exuded peace. And so I put my focus on that light, and I went instantaneously into this light. And my first thought was, this is brighter than the sun. It's going to burn me. and I'm already burned. So I was expecting this big impact of pain because I had just experienced that. And instead, I was hit with a great impact equal to it, but totally different, of peace and love.
Now let me ask you, whilst you were traveling through the tunnel, were you free of pain?
Yes, I was.
And did you note that?
I did not note that until I'd gone through the light, because I was so caught up in fear.
Yeah.
You know, that my fears were overwhelming even my ability to see anything but my fear. I did have a, just before, as I was going into the tunnel, I had a total life review. You know, it was like a film that was completely around me.
Yes.
And as it flashed all the way around me, what fascinated me beyond words could ever speak, or the things that I thought were very tiny and very little, were powerfully impacting. Like, you know, if we were just to be cruel or derogatory in just a little thing that we say to a child, I felt their pain.
Yes.
And I saw their pain. Now, at the time, out of my own frustration, I said it thoughtlessly, but never did I realize the suffering that child felt. Now, what I totally expected were the things that I had done so wrong, and I knew what they were, and I kept looking for those, but they weren't there, and that shocked me. And immediately I understood that the atonement took it all away. Or going through the proper repentance and forgiveness process and clearing it out of myself, the divinity of what was in me, it was now gone. But I was ever so surprised at the things that I thought that I had done good, realized that they didn't count because they were for my own ego. But the ones that did count were the small things, like smiling at somebody who was a total stranger. And I had an opportunity to see that this person that I had smiled at that day and said hello to and just told them it was a beautiful day and I was glad to see them. Didn't know them from Adam, but what I did see was that that person was walking off that day to go commit suicide. And that simple smile and acknowledging and valuing that person changed the course and direction of their entire life.
What a powerful statement that is right there. Goodness me. That's tremendous. And, you know, this sort of thing is being pointed out a lot when people, including myself, describe the life reviews that we experience. It's the little things that have got the greatest impact, whether it's positive or negative, you know. That's tremendous.
It's like a still pond, and we can't see the ripples. Mm-hmm. You know, you can take a little pebble and realize the extent of the frequency, you know, by the little tiny waves that we send out for a very long distance.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And yet, you know, all we can see is the action sometimes in our lives because of all the distractions. And, you know, it's funny, the more technology seems to be made available to us to supposedly help us, the more stressed we become.
Yes, isn't that a good point?
You know, for the dishwasher that was supposed to wash the dishes, now I have a better distraction to work a little harder at something else.
Yes.
You know, we have not come to realize that the more that we do, the more stressed our body is taking, the more our emotional stress, the more our spiritual stress. And in doing so, we're forgetting that those are all gifts to us so that we can be a service to others, not so that we can overladen and build our treasure troughs, you know?
Exactly, exactly. And that's a very important point you're making right there.
That actually was what was the final gavel, were the two components. And it was interesting. It wasn't until just recently that I found out, you know, what was going on in the head of my ex-husband. But in the near-death experience, I had the opportunity, you know, immediately to see my grandmother came to me. She was dressed in white, and she was just beautiful. And I was very stunned. Immediately, I realized I was dead or I wouldn't be there to see her. And she reached out her hand and said, "Come quickly, there's much you must learn." And what stunned me next was to look at her hand and mine, because immediately I noticed my hands were no longer burned. And they were perfect. And they were translucent with yet a substance and beautiful illuminating light flowing through it. I couldn't believe the beauty of my hand in its perfected state. It was just beautiful. And looking at her hand and feeling this immense amount of warmth. And, you know, when we walk, we don't realize this, but we quickly, within a matter of a millisecond, look down at our feet to see our feet move forward, because it's a trigger to our brain. And what amazed me, when we walk, we didn't walk, we moved in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized all of the, I don't feel pain anymore. Wow, I don't have to worry about going to the bathroom. Wow, I don't even have to worry about my teeth or how cold or hot. I mean, I started making all these evaluations immediately, you know, when I realized that my feet were moving by pure thought. And I started to evaluate the fact of how freeing it felt not to have this body that we have to work so hard to keep maintained.
Yes, indeed.
Holy cow, then it was, you know, no holds bar. I just went, oh, wow, teach me everything, you know.
Yes.
And the very first thing that, you know, she started to do is start teaching me. And it was like an overloaded computer of information coming at me at such high speed that, you know, have you ever studied for a test so much that you go, whoa, this is too much?
Oh, I do that all the time, even when I'm studying and researching for the shows and all this other stuff I do. I've never stopped being a student, as it were, and it can be quite overwhelming at times.
You do. You go, oh, man, I'm exhausted. And our bodies have to catch up with what our spirit wants to do.
Yes.
And, you know, our spirit creates ahead of time. Our body is delayed.
Isn't that the truth? That's a really good point there, because I've experienced that so much. And the body, at least my body, seems to be light years behind me consciousness and all of the things that I'm thinking about creating and doing.
It's funny, because with a lot of near-deathers, I find this is true. They, you know, their spiritual self moves far faster, and that's why we have the gift to see, you know, apparitions like with spirits in the room, our ability to see, because our spirit is ahead of itself. It takes time for our body to catch up, you know, with what we've already spiritually created.
Yes.
And it is so, on many occasions, you know, it's just so frustrating that my tongue cannot move as fast, or my verbal skills cannot describe even the beauty of the place where I was, the gardens, the colors that don't exist in this mortality.
Isn't that the truth? Mm.
Oh, I don't know about you, but I miss those colors.
I do too.
I'm
do
so too. Sick of the brown, the green, the gray. You know,
yes.
I'm always searching with my physical eyes to see the brighter colors. And it's so frustrating to look in a red and realize there's so many varieties of red.
Isn't that the truth? And something that's very interesting, because you and I both have a background in media. When I was on television news in Nashville a few years ago, the anchorman, Alan Freo, just produced this really dreary, drab, dark backdrop. And I was so frustrated and admittedly angry, and I wanted to say, that's not what it's like on the other side. That's what it's like on this side.
That's right.
The other side is luminous and radiant and beautiful and light. why would you create this spooky, dark, drab? And of course, it was, you know, it was the beginning of November, right after Halloween, and they were just trying to create this spooky, sensationalist news segment. And I thought, oh, blimey, you know, that's not the way it is on the other side. At least not for the most part anyway, and it was so misleading, and I was really upset about that. And so I really appreciate it when others, you know, we can just all iterate and keep iterating how luminous and glorious it is.
And the sounds.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I get so frustrated at turning on, you know, radio and listening to music, and never, it just feels so, and excuse the word, retarded, or, you know, just behind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you know that there are spiritual tones and sounds at higher pitches, at greater depths.
Yes.
And you spiritually yearn. I don't know about you, but I spiritually yearn to hear those sounds.
Well, I do too, and I heard them all, you know, throughout my different NDEs. And being a musician, you know, that kind of stuff was very, very meaningful to me and bringing it in. And, you know, I feel homesick. I'm not going to lie.
It's very difficult. I the only place that I can hear the purity of that sound is going on a walk in the mountains.
I was just thinking the same thing, and I'm in the mountains and on a lake here, and I feel a little bit closer to that element, but it's still...
Well, because everything in that element is perfect.
Yes.
It's perfect. You know, it's not man-made. It's not a man-made illusion. It's
exactly
perfect in its state. Because every plant, every water, every element that is living on the earth is a living being. It's a living substance. It may not have the intelligence at the level we have, but it's certainly living and perfect in its state.
Absolutely.
And I realized that when I was over there, that just every sound was glorifying God.
Yes.
You know, singing the sound of a song to God. And the thing that immediately hit me when I felt so crammed with information, I said, stop, I can't take it. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, we stopped in mid-air. You know, which seemed to be between two planes or two spheres of existence.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember everything running by us in that stop position. And she said, this place is a place where you have got to let go of all doubts and fears. And then she waved her hand, and I got to see moments of my existence, my life existence, where doubt and fear had stopped so many wonderful experiences and opportunities in my life, but I shut it down because I was too afraid.
Wow, that's
or
another
I had doubt.
Good point right there.
And it was, it was a point of saying, this is a place to trust and let go. And so I gave up right there into trust and faith. And immediately we moved again. And I remember her talking about simple things, about simple principles of love. And I said, why are you teaching this? I wanted the deep stuff. You know, take me to other galaxies. Teach me. You know, come on. I want to know, do aliens exist? You know, give me it all. You know, and she said, Renelle, in the greatest simplicity is where all the mysteries of heaven are found. And she said, love is not just an emotion. It's an actual energy and power that can create and change everything. You know, it is not just a feeling, but you have to work as a co-creator with the divine to create beautiful things through this thing called the power of love.
Perfect, yes.
And she then took me to see many things. And, of course, I wanted to reconnect with people that I knew. And, of course, I did. And it was just amazing. There was a young man that was my cousin who had died just that summer before in a horrific accident. And I wanted to go and throw my arms around and embrace him, and I was stopped. And I said, why? And they said, because he's still progressing and learning. He was brought home because if he had been left there, he would have lost a great deal of what he had already gained. And I thought that was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what she was talking about. But when I came back from, you know, my near-death experience, I talked to the mother of that boy, who was my cousin, and I found out that he was a drug dealer. And he died in a accident where the guy that was driving with him was drunk. And so it was stunning to me, you know, that there were facts that I wasn't aware of. As I moved into this experience, you know, of course it was so amazing and wonderful to have the opportunity to know that there is an existence that is, you know, just so far beyond. You know, you forget even that there are people and that you loved, you know, behind you on this mortal plane, because you're now in a new existence of so much wonder and so much beauty and so much peace and education and learning if you open yourself to it. The only thing that stops you is your own limiting thought.
That's such a good point you're making too. And you know, that other thing, when you were talking about missed opportunities, for some reason, I don't know if it was last night or night before, but I was thinking, if I were to see my life review again right now, what missed opportunities would I behold? I'm going through a lot of deep thoughts right now, for sure.
Well, that just comes with being a near-deather. Isn't it? You know, that's the bad part. We're so complex. We think on so many different levels.
I've pretty much always been that way, really. And of course, with each NDE, it's just been compounded and compounded. But it's so interesting because it's just, for some reason, it's really paramount on my mind right now. What opportunities have I missed because I've been afraid or what have you? And fear, boy, that's a bad one. That's a nasty one.
Or judgment. You know, I think, about an experience I just had the other night. I went to a gas station late at night. It was a trucker's gas station, you know, whatever you call those in England.
Uh-huh.
We call them semi-trucks. you know, and they're interesting characters. And, you know, so I take, you know, late at night I get a little more, you know, careful. I'm a single woman now. And so I went into this gas station, you know, to look around and grab something to eat. And I had just done a speaking engagement. And this guy comes up to me, and he looks really scraggly and scary. You know, he had this big white beard on. He had this hat on, you know, that was pretty torn up. He looked homeless, you know, and he had all these pins on his hat. And, you know, immediately my fear struck me. And immediately my judgment struck me. Oh, no, you know, because he kept following me around this little tiny gas station mini store. And I'm going, uh-oh, you know, so I started heading for the door. And then I stopped and turned around and looked at him, and he said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scare you, but I don't get to see an angel ever.
Oh, bless him.
And I turned to him, you know, and I have a lot of facial scars. And I said, as you can see, I'm far from being a beautiful angel. And I said, I'm just a human being. And he says, no, you're an angel. And he started opening up his heart that he had gone to Vietnam with nine other friends from this tiny little town, and he was the only one that returned from Vietnam. And he started to cry, and he says, "And when I came back, I don't know why God saved an evil man." And I said, "Because he loved you enough to allow you to feel it in this life and have the opportunity to love and serve and change." And he just said, you know, we got an opportunity to talk. My daughter, who was sitting in the car, was frustrated. And when she saw me talking to this guy, she got really scared for me.
Oh.
And I said, Mom, let's go. And I said, no. I said, stop and listen. And this man just was weeping. And he said, well, you know, I've accepted Jesus Christ as my Savior, but just let him and everybody, when you go back, know that I do believe. And I am trying my best to be a good man.
That's really special that you had that experience, and how telling it is indeed. A really good example that is that people really need to not judge, especially by the packaging.
Oh, it was everything, and my daughter, you know, looked at him, and you could see even the change in her heart.
Wow.
You know, suddenly the fear was gone, and it exchanged it into this beautiful, loving moment. And we looked behind the counter, and the lady, who was so harsh and coarse, because she, you know, deals with these kind of people all day long,
mm-hmm.
just to see her smile and tear up.
Oh.
You know, and when we left, of course, you couldn't talk. You know, it was just such a powerful moment. And you know when you've had that powerful moment, your hands tingle.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And the frequency of your body is just so great. And it's just so overwhelming, you can't talk. It's a sacred moment, you know?
You know, we've just got a minute left, believe it or not. Gosh, we could go on for hours. This is so fascinating and so profound and beautiful. I'm so pleased that we were finally able to get through to you.
Wow, was that a day?
yes, indeed. What is your website? Let's help people to find you. And again, the title of your book is Burning Within.
Yes, it's called The Burning Within.
The Burning Within.
The Burning Within, because there's a shift that takes place, and it's that burning within, not the outside, that needed to be refined.
Yes.
You can find me at www.ranelle, R-A-N-E-L-L-E, Wallace, WALLACE.com. And, of course, your site is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So anyone can link up to your site and find me.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
I didn't get it. Oh, you've got to read the book, because I saw a son that I was going to have, and he is the one who talked me into coming back, because I didn't want to come back.
Wow.
I had cancer afterwards. I was told I'd never have kids. Now he's 15 years old.
You know what? We're going to have you back on the show, because I can see already we've got a lot more to cover, and it's going to be tremendous when we do. Mandir, thank you so much for being with us on this transmission of Toward the Light. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale. And thank everyone for listening to Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Please remember that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. And please remember, as is evidence with all NDEers, only love prevails. We will talk to you next week on the next transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. We will be speaking with Nadia McCaffrey, another near-death experiencer. So please join us, and we will definitely have Ranelle back on Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all.